Welcome, everyone, to our second call. I'm Kristen. It's Monday night on April Fool's Day. Oh, boy. We're going to look into, because of a question submitted by Pamela, illness, and then also with an add-in from Sheldon about injury and the emotional component of that. And let me just start by introducing Pamela's question. I'm worried and afraid about my health, and I think that we probably all are. I stress about it and know that that is not helpful. I have diabetes and high cholesterol. I'm taking meds for both now. I changed my diet to mostly vegan 6 years ago, and I was able to control the diabetes with diet and exercise for the first 5 years, which I was very happy about. Now I need to take meds. And I feel a bit like I've failed. And after thinking about it, I blame and shame myself, even though my doctor has said that it's genetic. I'm having trouble making peace with the fear and worry, accepting what is. Well, let's address this question first, and we'll get to injury in a bit. But I want to just kind of cover this one thought at a time. And I want to ask my husband, who's on the call, to respond about this. And certainly about the vegan thing. Hold on, I lost my, what just happened. So Kirk, are you on the call?
Yeah, I'm on.
All right. So Kirk just recently hired a $1,000 an hour specialist on diet. And he told you something about how after about 5 years of being a vegan, there's a downside. Do you mind sharing a little bit about that?
Well, just to step back a little bit, he was very specific about not being pro any diet. And so there's not one diet that fits everybody. Everybody's body's different, and different diets work for different people. So I really liked him because he wasn't like, this is a diet you need to be on. He was, you know, everybody needs to find the diet that works for them. But one thing he did say was there was an overriding theme he's seen with vegan diets, in that people generally after 5 years find deficiencies in their system due to not eating a well-balanced diet. And he said that the people he saw that worked, the vegan diet worked the best on long-term, were robust males. That seemed to be the body type that the vegan diet worked for a long time. But the big thing he said about the vegan diet was there's this honeymoon stage of the first 2 years. But he said that's mostly a result of people cleaning up their diet. Where the vegan's a very restrictive diet, but he thought a lot of the benefits they're receiving is because they actually cleaned up their eating from their previous food eating lifestyle. But anyway, the short version was, you know, one diet doesn't fit all. Find the diet that works for your body based on your genetic basis, your body type. And then the long-term successful vegan diet seemed to work most successfully on robust males. But again, that was kind of a somewhat general statement.
And this guy is the foremost expert that we've found on diet currently. And the reason why I'm introducing this to the conversation is because, Pamela, of what you wrote about how the vegan diet helped you control your diabetes for a few years. And what I think Kirk is suggesting is that it may have just been cutting out, you know, pizza, and I don't know if that's what you ate before, but just cutting out crap food was able to control your diabetes. And it lasts for a few years. And then all of a sudden it doesn't work. And I've actually had a lot of clients that come to me for physical and issues, and I've actually seen this many, many times. And so what I think the takeaway, at least for this first part, is that while getting off crap food may have been the thing that made your diabetes calm down, you know, maybe trying a new diet might be also a next step that you might want to look into. But that is not my area of expertise, but I wanted to just make sure that that was covered first. The second part of this is looking into the fear, and shame and guilt that we are the cause for all of our physical maladies. I actually took up a few years ago asking all my friends that came down with cancer a simple question. Why do you think you came down with cancer? Why do you think you have cancer? And I've gotten everything from bad luck to, oh, microwaves and cell phones, to I feel like in a past lifetime I may have, you know, I'm now being punished for that, like it, and everything in between. And but I would say that 80% of the time people would somehow blame themselves, either the environment that they put themselves in, some sort of emotional issue. It's not unusual to blame ourselves. Is somebody trying to speak?
Oh, okay. Hi, Kristen. It's Pam. I'm sorry. I'm late.
Okay. Did you miss the part about veganism and how there's a romantic period and then it ends? Were you on there for that? If not, then just be sure to listen to the recording later, okay?
Okay. Okay.
Okay. So anyway, when we hear from our doctors that our problem is genetic, you know, it's probably sometimes a relief, like, oh, okay, it's not a character flaw. I don't need to feel shame and guilt about this. It's just bad luck, right? But it's, I think that in asking that question and the answer that I got with all of my friends that have cancer, you know, 80% of us, even if we know that it's genetic, even if we think that it's microwaves, we think that there is some sort of character flaw, that it's something to do with us, that there's something that we've done that has resulted in us being sick now. And sometimes, I mean, absolutely not. One of the people that I talked to was this really, really lovely woman who died of cancer at age 45. She was a sweet, peaceful soul who taught meditation. Like, it didn't make any sense. There just seems to be no possible way that it could be some sort of character flaw. She was one of the most wonderful people I've ever met. And whoever is making a lot of noise, could you put yourself on mute if you're going to multitask? Thank you. So sometimes, no, it's clearly not a character flaw. And other times, absolutely yes. It seems really, really obvious. Like, I watched a documentary the other day on a woman who had 4 children that she gave birth to, and each one of them have severe autism. And her conclusion, and her doctors actually concluded, that it's just bad luck. And anybody with half a brain will look at that and say, there's no way that's just bad luck. There's something going on there. And I would think long and hard before this woman had a 5th child before she tried to figure out what it is, you know, wouldn't you think? I know of a kid who has had grade 8 out of 10 migraines for the last 3 years. I think he's 14 years old. And he doesn't exercise. He has a terrible diet, and he plays video games all day with bad posture. And that is another example of, like, clearly there's something that this kid is doing wrong that's causing these migraines. It's not just bad luck. It's not just genetics. So often it's a combination of basically everything, including physical genetics, situational, and emotional. Breaking it down, my neck. I have a really jacked up neck right now. And part of it is physical genetics. I don't know that genetics so much as the fact that I've had 10 incidences of whiplash over the years. And if you look at an x-ray of my neck, it looks pretty bad. So that's physical, not genetics, but physical. The second part is situational. Now, the situation is that I've been typing by looking down for years now, and I know that that's part of the deal with my neck being so jacked up, because my neck feels fine until I get on the computer and I type for 5 minutes. And so it's finally, like, tipped over the edge. So that's, like, the situational component. And then there's the emotional component. Like, I have some emotional stuck places from what caused the whiplash over the years. I also have, I hold tension, you know, emotional tension in my shoulders and my neck and my lower back. So I would say, if you were to break down my neck, I, you know, having been a professional athlete, maybe I'm a little bit more in touch with my body than most people. I would say physical genetics, for me, just physical in this case, 20% is the problem. of the problem. Situational, actually, let's call it, 20%. Situational, 50%. I think 50% of my neck issues are because of the way I type. And then the emotional component, I feel, is 30%, rounding out the equation. Now, if I were to get rid of the situational component, 50% of my issue with my neck, would I feel better? You're damn right I would. If I would sort out the emotional component of my bad neck, 30% of it, would I feel better? Absolutely. I'm also working on the physical part of it. And so when we break it all down, you know, when we think, oh, I feel shame and guilt, doctor says it's just genetic, nothing I can do about it. Like, first of all, we know that's BS. We know that's not true. We know that there's something else going on, and there always is. And so the shame and guilt that comes in is supposed to motivate us to fix the problem, you know? And shame and guilt is not necessarily what I'm feeling with my neck, but it's what you, Pamela, mentioned. So turning it over to you, Pamela, when we think about your diabetes, your cholesterol, let's take it one at a time. Your diabetes, what part of it out of 1 to 100% do you feel is physical? What part of it do you feel it's genetics? Which maybe let's put that in the same category. What part of it do you think is situational, and which part of it do you think of it as emotional? What do you think?
I haven't really thought of it that way, but maybe I should just go with a third each.
Okay.
Just to start, because I'm sure that those are all components, but I'm just not sure where, you know, it would break down for me. But I know that emotionally, it's I feel stuck, so maybe that has a bigger part.
Well, let's break down the emotional component. And I have a lot of analogies in my book about this, but my favorite one is when you're in flow with your emotions, it's like water that's running into, through, and out of your life, like through a hose. But if you kink the hose and that water gets stopped up, what do we know about stagnant pools of water? Well, they're ripe for bacteria and illness to thrive. You know, it's like your body becomes the ideal candidate for cancer to thrive, for diabetes to thrive. You know, I don't know enough about diabetes or high cholesterol to know how that really shows up, but I do know that for me, having rheumatoid arthritis, for example, it's a genetic thing. You know, my grandfather had it, my father had it, but it could stay dormant in my system for life. But it's triggered by stress. It's one of the only diseases that are known to be triggered by stress. Like they're statistically proven, like scientifically proven that it's triggered by stress. And so next thing you know, I go through a terrible breakup with my boyfriend. I'm totally stressed out. Next thing you know, I have rheumatoid arthritis. And once it gets triggered, you got it for life. And so that's a souvenir from that relationship, you know. And there's this emotional component going on at that time. So when we stop up our emotions, we know that it's bad for us, and it creates the ideal host environment for illness to thrive. You know, I actually have a new client that struggles with constant reoccurring UTIs, and I haven't started working with her. I start working with her next week, but it's going to be a fascinating journey just to see what we find. You know, this is the first client I've ever had that's only coming to me for a physical issue, and that's it. So if you guys can remember, check in with me after about a month, and I'll tell you how it's going. And now I'm not going to share details because it's confidential, but, you know, that's all I'm going to tell you. But I will tell you how it's going. You know, what are we going to accomplish? Because it's only going to be looking at the emotional component. As for the situational component, you know, we know a thing or two about diabetes. What kind of diabetes do you have?
It's type 2.
Type 2. And I don't know enough about diabetes to know what that means.
Oh, it's adult onset. So my pancreas does make some insulin, but it's like I have a faulty sugar mechanism going on. So it doesn't make enough insulin to take care of the sugar in my blood, and so then I have higher sugar than I should, which can cause damage, you know, to your eyes, kidneys, heart, you know, that sort of thing. But
so this isn't the diabetes that like a child would get. This is like an adult thing that often you see in people that are overweight. You know, when we hear of somebody that has diabetes and cholesterol, we immediately think of somebody that's eating the all-you-can-eat deep-fried buffet, you know, that's 300 pounds overweight. That's not you, though. Like, right? Right.
Right,
so,
yeah.
You know, we're, like, back to my friend that died of cancer, who was a meditation, you know, guru and was a super sweet woman. It's like, how could this be situational for you? It doesn't seem to make any sense, but how do you think that it might be situational for you? And, you know, don't answer that yet, because we're going to answer it from a different form of consciousness.
Okay.
Rather than this, because I want to get right down to business pretty soon. So
okay.
Just bookmark that thought.
Okay.
And then there's the genetic. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Well, I just wanted to say that as you were talking about how you were stressed and then the rheumatoid arthritis showed up in your life, that's exactly what happened to me. I was very stressed, and, you know, a few months later, I was diagnosed with diabetes. And that's what happens with diabetes, too. It gets turned on. I had the genetic propensity for it, and then the stress, I think, just kind of put me over the edge, and, you know, so very similar to RA.
I have always tried to simplify things as much as possible, and I've been long wondering what stress is. Like, what is the relationship between stress and fear? And you know, anxiety and stress are different. Like, they feel different. And I figured out what, you know, anxiety is to fear. You know, they're basically very similar. It's just recirculating fear. That's what anxiety is. But what is stress? And so finally I came up with this equation. And just try this on and see if it feels right. But stress is like a whole bunch of negative experiences or feelings or emotions, like fear plus anger plus sadness plus frustration plus unworthiness and self plus self-esteem plus times resistance. So it gets exacerbated by resistance. But it's like plus times. And we go through these situations, you know, maybe we get fired from a job when our rent's due and we have no money. Maybe we are going through a terrible breakup, or, you know, there's so many different things that are going to cause us stress in our lives. The resistance exacerbates it, of course. But we all know that stress is bad for us. And then it leads, as we're talking about, to disease, you know, triggers disease. I know that Parkinson's is triggered by this kind of thing. I know that they've actually determined that emotional repression also triggers Alzheimer's. So, and Alzheimer's and Parkinson's are kind of in the same category. It's like all the books on how to avoid Alzheimer's talks about not repressing your emotions. Like, it's, you know, it's situational can also just be that emotional component that we're talking about, and the stress and staying in that place for too long, maybe because of the resistance to the other frustration, fear, anger, sadness. So it's similar to what I teach. So moving on, then there's the genetic component. Now, I wrote a whole section on this in my book, and it got edited out. And I'm looking for the first draft of the book before we got on this call. I couldn't find it. Hopefully, I'll find it afterwards. If I find it, I'll cut and paste this whole section and send it to you all, because I thought it was a really good section. But at this point, emotional repression, this is kind of talking a little bit about what was in that section, may be in our DNA. Like, if you're mother and your grandmother and your great-grandmother and all your ancestors for, you know, millennium back have been repressing emotions, it may even be genetically pre-programmed in your system for you to be a repressive emotional person. Similar to how I can have a genetic predisposition for rheumatoid arthritis, I can also have a genetic predisposition towards having emotional repression issues, which is fascinating, you know, to consider. But now also consider this, and you guys are going to have to look this up on your own because I didn't spend a lot of time looking into it, but there is an astronaut, Scott Kelly, who went out into space, and he was an identical twin, and they thought this was a great opportunity to study genetic makeup. So they got his genetic readout before he left, and then they got his genetic readout after he came back. And what they found is, this is the most important part, is over time, his genetics kind of went back to normal, except for 7% change. Now, that's a lot. So 7% change in your genetics for going out into outer space, and I guess there was a lot of stress in outer space. That's kind of what they're likening it to. But the point is we can change our genetics. Like, this is mind-boggling information. But the bad news is it brings back us to your question and your concern, Pamela, is that it suggests that if we have disease, it's all on us. You know, the physical component, the genetic component, the situational, the emotional, it's all on us. And it is a character flaw if we have these problems. Now, you put that coat on, and it's a heavy coat to wear. And so it's such a relief, like, oh, it's just genetic, there's nothing I can do about it. Like, that's a relief for a lot of people. But it's also a possible stuck place. You know, and I think that there is a genetic component, and certainly it's not like you can change how tall you are. Like, we can't really change our genetics. And then there's also, how much work do we have to do to change your genetics? It's just like, you're stuck if you think that it's not on you, and you're stuck if you think that it is all on you. And so I think, as with anything, the Buddha calls it the middle way, where the real wisdom lies is somewhere in the middle. Now, the other component is, I have brain fog, and eradicate quite a bit of my brain fog. I know that I could change my lifestyle, but it's like, how much am I really motivated to do that? How much does this really matter to me? When I could, like, certainly with high cholesterol or with diabetes, I can just take a pill and be done with it. And then I can still enjoy bread, you know? So it's always this question in the back of our mind, like, how much do we really want to put into this? How much do we really want to carry this burden around of, like, trying to turn our cancer around? And you always hear the story about the person that doesn't do the traditional medicine. They don't get the radiation or the chemotherapy. They try to do it with, you know, going to Mexico and having a faith healer wave some chicken feet at their forehead. You know, it's just like, we know that we also have limitations on how much our will and our ability to just kind of, now proven that we can change our genetics, really will ever work. So this is a long roundabout way of saying what, you know, what is your motivation? What is your willingness to kind of listen to the lessons of your shame and guilt and get to work and put the Rocky theme music on and give it everything you've got? How much of it really is genetics that can't be altered? And I kind of gave you an earful, and I'm just going to ask you, Pamela, what do you think? And then we're going to do some voice dialogue.
Okay.
What do you think?
Well, I agree with what you said. And, you know, it's interesting that, you know, it's a paradox, because if I blame it on genetics, okay, I'm off the hook, but I'm still stuck. But if I don't, then, you know, I'm still in, like, a stuck place. So I guess, like you say, figuring out what the middle way would be a good thing. You know, I agree with what you say.
With that in mind, allow me please to speak to the voice of cholesterol. Now, before you shift, what we'll now do is speak to some pretty advanced voices. And in order to really allow these voices to have free, clear access to be able to have a conversation with me, you know, what do we have to do to get there? Well, we have to get out of our own way. We have to get out our thoughts and opinions about what cholesterol is. We have to out of the way. We have to get our preconceived notions about, you know, what is really going on. If we really want to have a conversation and have maybe some insights that aren't just going to be the same thing that we've read about or heard about from doctors or, you know, beliefs that we've had over the years, and you're not just going to have the same conversation but from a different lens, you know, can we just actually speak to the voice of cholesterol and have it speak on its behalf? And the reason why I'm doing this is when I was younger and I was having some serious issues with my knees, they just wouldn't heal. I was having tremendous pain. I had patella tendonitis. I'll be damned if I didn't go to a hypnotherapist and he brokered a conversation. This was long before I had learned voice dialogue between me and my knee. And I had two conversations with my knee. And that's the thing that finally turned it around. Not the surgery that I had, not the supplements that I was taking, nothing that I did. I even gave a Catholic priest $20 to pray for me. I was that desperate, right? But having a conversation, an honest conversation with my knee and just letting my knee speak without my getting in its way. In the words of the Buddha, you know, you have within you all the wisdom that you need to be anything you want to be. So in this shift that we're about to make, please just as much as possible get all preconceived notions out of the way and allow me, please, to speak to the voice of cholesterol. Who am I speaking to?
The voice of cholesterol.
Okay. So just be you. And know that it's using your brain and your mouth to communicate. And know that Pamela is listening. So tell me about you. And I don't necessarily want to know, like, the stuff that I can just Google, you know, and find out about you. Like, tell me about you. Like, okay. Tell me some things that maybe we don't know.
Okay, I'm speaking from the voice of cholesterol. And I just had a thought that...
No, hold on. Let me just change you because words really do matter. I'm the voice of cholesterol.
Okay. I'm the voice of cholesterol.
Right.
And I'm concerned about Pam, and I don't want her to have a heart attack.
From where you sit and the view that you have, is that something that might happen?
Yes. Yes, her doctor has said that we need to take steps to lower the cholesterol so that that doesn't happen.
So she needs to take steps to lower me, the levels of me in her body, so that doesn't happen. Okay. Why have you gotten to be so excessive in her system?
So what in her system?
Excessive.
Separate?
Excessive. E-X-C-E-S-S-I-V-E.
Okay, excessive. Well, I think it's because of genetics.
Hold on. Let me just say something here. She's been told it's because of genetics.
Okay.
And here's the dilemma we face when we do a voice like you. There is this thing called the thinking mind, and the thinking mind has lots and lots of opinions, has been fed a lot of information. Like, there's a whole filing cabinet of information that she's been fed. What I'm hoping you'll do is say, I feel, because you're a voice that's found in the body, and the body is without thoughts. And so I'm really hoping that the answers will just come to you and you'll just speak them as I feel, because when I hear, I think, it seems like we're just back in that kind of filing cabinet of information that she's been fed. You follow?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
I feel...
Why have you become so excessive? And let's just ask the question, did her father have a lot of you in their system as well?
Yes.
All right. And probably grandparents and on and on and on. So how much of you being here today in her system in such an excessive way is based on that, and how much is it something else?
I think I feel that it's because of her, it was excessive in her parents and her grandparents. So I feel that that's why I'm excessive in Pam.
When a body kind of matures and ages, you know, I've seen different statistics, but the most aggressive statistics is that a body is created 97% anew every 3 months. And yet, here you are, still the same. And there's this genetic code. I mean, are you just destined because of genetics to just create a lot of cholesterol again and again and again? Like you're just, you know, manufacturing plant for cholesterol. Like that's the body, and that's, you know, you're just in this factory and you're just the end result, the natural, organic, genetically pre-programmed end result of that.
Yes, I feel that that's my job. I'm just making cholesterol. I'm not trying to hurt anybody, but I'm just making cholesterol.
Right. Oh, you're not making cholesterol. More specifically, you are cholesterol, and the body is just genetically pre-programmed to make you in excessive quantities. Why is that from your perspective? Not from her perspective, but from your perspective, what merit do you serve? Like, why are you here in such excessive quantities? Back to that question.
I feel that I'm trying to protect her, to get her attention.
To get her attention? And what message, like, what is, I mean, she has your full attention right now. What's your message?
I feel that my message is to get her to take a medication, continue to eat and exercise like she's been doing. So I feel like I'm trying to get her attention.
Okay. Let's take it into bigger picture, and I think that this will help. What message do you have for humanity? And let's actually make it specific to America. What message do you have for America? Why are you getting to be a bigger and bigger problem for Americans?
My message would be that humanity would pay more attention to diet and exercise rather than just taking pills.
What do you see humanity, American humanity, doing instead? I mean, yes, pill taking. You know, let me just say one thing. I mean, there's a pill for everything. And like antibiotics, take antibiotics, for example. Like the overuse of antibiotics is now creating antibiotic-resistant strains of bacteria. You know, the genetically modified organisms, like a food, you know, it's like science is just trying to change and fix and alter, and, you know, there's just like not such an organic flow going on anymore. I mean, I don't know how big of a deal you were 200-300 years ago for people, but they didn't live very long. Like, you know, let's keep looking at the bigger picture. Like, people are getting, they're eating different kinds of food. They're, you know, they're living longer. Like, what's the big picture here from your perspective about why you've become so rampant, and what are people doing that isn't working such that you've become so rampant?
Well, people's diets are not good anymore. And even if people were to eat a healthy diet, they're still not getting, it's, food isn't like it was 50 or 100 years ago. Like you say, you know, things have been modified. And another thought is that people are living longer. And so I'm popping up more just because people are living longer. Like if people die at 50, you know, you might not have heard of me.
Right, and I don't know. Do you show up more in older people, or do you not discriminate?
I don't discriminate.
Right, so I don't even know if that's a component. What advice do you have to give to Pamela? And she's a vegan, you know, it helped a lot with her blood sugar for a while. I don't know if it helped with you. What advice?
Yeah, it did help with me. Her cholesterol did go down. My level, or I'm the cholesterol. Mm-hmm. I did go down, but not enough.
And that wasn't enough.
Right, it wasn't enough. I'm still high, but I have come down through diet and exercise from what I was before. So that's a good thing. But I'm still high.
What is the emotional component here? And start big picture. Like, how are humans dealing with their emotions, their stress? Are they, you know, they're a lot of times resisting any kind of unpleasant frustration or hatred or anger. I'm not looking for a pat answer. Like, just really, truly, from your perspective, does that even have anything to do with you?
I would say so, yes.
What advice do you have to give to her emotionally?
I think I would say to her to relax a little bit. You know, she's doing a good job. She's trying. And maybe she should try and just accept what is.
So if you were her husband and she's stressed out and the husband says, relax, accept what is, how would that go down?
Well, if I were her husband, that probably wouldn't work very well.
Right. So when you say to somebody, like, just goddamn it, relax already, you know, accept me for who I am, and accept life, like, doesn't go down very well, typically. You know, why not? Like, right, like if the fact that she's upset about the fact that you're even here, you know, you're like this terror in her life, or like this mean person or a bully, and she's forced to live with you, and you're like, oh, just calm the F down and just accept me. You know, it doesn't really, it's nice advice, and you said it in a nice way, but, you know, just from her perspective, it's not so easy.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Do you have any other advice to give her?
I would tell her that, and she might not like this either, but to not take it so personally, like it's a character flaw, because I'm high in a lot of people. And it could be something she's doing, or it could be not, or it could be, you know, a combination of what she's doing and what she's not doing. But I'm high in a lot of people.
Yeah, and it's kind of like the whole misery loves company. Like, if Kristen's ever feeling bad about her life, she'll go watch a video about a woman with four autistic kids, and all of a sudden she feels a lot better. It's like, okay, life isn't so bad. Like, it's just nice to know that I'm not alone, you know, that she's not alone, that everybody struggles with you. And that's why I love this bigger picture question, these bigger picture questions, is because, you know, we get kind of a more of a bird's eye view of what's really going on. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of blood sugar. Who am I speaking to?
The voice of blood sugar.
All right. So diabetes is on the rise, thus you're on the rise. So it's the voice of blood sugar. Just what do you see? What's your bigger picture, like looking at American humanity? Why are you so excessive?
I want to get people's attention to have them change their diets and their lifestyle, so they don't have to deal with me.
Kirk said before that diet, it's not a one-size-fits-all. Like a vegan diet isn't going to work for everybody. Paleo diet isn't going to work for everybody. So maybe address their diet, look into their diet. You know, and then there's this whole GMO thing that we're talking about. What about lifestyle, though? You know, what, from your perspective, do people need to change about their lifestyle so that you're not so excessive?
I feel like people have become inactive, and that contributes to me being hot, higher or... Yeah, being higher in people.
Taking it more personal, look at Pamela. Is she inactive?
No, she's very active.
So then what's your message to her?
Well, I brought attention. When I got high, she paid attention to me and to her overall health, because she wasn't really taking care of herself. She was maybe putting other people before herself, and I showed her that she's the only one that can really take care of herself, as far as like eating the right foods, becoming active, learning how to, you know, keep her stress down. So I provided a wake-up call for her. And she's a lot more active now. And she eats better.
And yet she has to take medication, and she feels like it's a sign of personal weakness that she has to also control you and that other guy we were just speaking to through medication. And doctor says, oh, it's just genetics, nothing you can do about it. But he's trying to be nice and helpful for her. What do you have to say about all that?
Let's see. Well, I'm a little, can you repeat that? Again, I'm having a little trouble figuring or feeling that.
Okay, allow me please to speak to the voice of blood sugar. Who am I speaking to?
The voice of blood sugar.
I kind of added a few things, and that just comes in the moment. So let me see if I can recreate most of it. But the doctor, trying to be helpful, trying to make her feel better, said, oh, it's just genetic. There's nothing you can do about it. Trying to help her have less shame or guilt about the fact that you're elevated. First of all, let me ask a different question then. Should she feel shame and guilt that you're still elevated? Is there something that she should still look at?
No, she shouldn't feel shame or guilt. I know that's how she feels, but she really, there's no reason for her to feel shame or low self-esteem or guilt.
Are you a character flaw?
Yes. Well, no, I'm not a character flaw. I just am high blood sugar. But I feel that she thinks that it's a character flaw.
That you're a character flaw.
Yeah.
What should she be feeling from your perspective that might be a good motivator for her?
I feel like she should just, that I'm here to help her focus on herself, take care of herself, think of things, how things are going to affect her. Like, I'm here to protect her, help her.
Okay. Bring her awareness to her body, what's going on in her body. And maybe that's the big picture takeaway, too. Like, people are just so in their heads and not enough time spent in their bodies, just paying attention to their bodies. So that could be a really big takeaway for her, for all of us, that maybe the bigger picture problem of all of these RA, diabetes, stress, like Parkinson's, cholesterol, like all these things, it's just the list goes on and on. They're getting bigger, stronger, worse and worse, you know, for so many different people. It's like we've got to start paying attention to a different intellect maybe than just science or reason or pills and just really kind of come back to our roots, our body, and just spend some time with it, pay attention to it, listen to it, give it what it wants, even have the ability to have the insight of knowing what it wants, you know? And I think that we're headed there. There's just more and more books being written about different types of diets and how to eat healthy, and more people are kind of getting on that bandwagon, getting off gluten, things like that. And so we're headed in the right direction, but it's almost like you and cholesterol are like here to send a message, not just to Pamela, but to humanity about a course correction. Like, okay, GMOs, you know, noble effort to help feed, you know, 7.5 billion headed towards 8 people, you know, overpopulation. Like, there's all sorts of things that need to be addressed. And these physical issues, such as you, are just trying to get our attention and get us to wake the F up and start paying attention to our bodies and our core and maybe a more, and our emotions for that matter, which is what I help people with, and not be so science oriented, so left brain, big brain, thinking, logical mind. That is kind of how I'm taking away this conversation and those are the insights I'm coming up with. Anything else that you can see?
That makes a lot of sense. Because I typically am, like, I didn't realize how much I was in my head, but I am all about in my head. And, you know, if my diabetes and cholesterol are bringing me back to my body and my emotions, instead of, like, trying to problem solve. So this, you know, my blood sugar and high cholesterol could be taking me on a totally different path, which would be a good thing, getting me out of my head and into my body and into my emotions.
That's a really beautiful thing, and I think that's where we're all headed, and I believe that that's what we'll definitely be focusing on for the remaining phone calls that we have. But for now, we're kind of like going through that transition, and the more I do this work, the more I realize that I'm in the business of getting people out of their heads and into their bodies. Like, really, that's what this is all about. You know, it's what I just keep coming back to again and again and again. And so shifting the focus to Sheldon, who talked about injury. Are you here?
Yes, I'm here. Sorry, it took me a second. Right. Unmute there.
All right. So what is a part of your body that hurts the most?
My middle back.
Okay. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the middle back. Who am I speaking to?
The voice of the middle back.
Okay. Sheldon's middle back. So you're not Sheldon, Sheldon's not you, but you're a part of him, you're part of his body, you're in the department of the body, and you exist without thought, but we have to invite our thoughts into the conversation so that you can communicate. So use his mind, use his mouth to communicate with me. How's it going?
It's been rough.
What's the roughest part for you? I talked about physical, like we could do an x-ray of you. We could talk about situational, like is he slouching? Like is he skiing wrong? Like is there an emotional component? Like what of those three, like do you want to give it a percentage? You know, why are you so inflamed?
I think it's not, it's definitely not entirely a physical thing. In fact, it's not mostly a physical thing.
So shift and say, I feel, because you don't think you feel.
Okay.
I feel.
I'm feeling what it is mostly.
Or just give it a percentage. What part of it is genetic out of 1 in 100 to 100? Why are you in pain?
From a physical perspective, there is no genetic predisposition for this.
How about physical? Has he injured you? Like, has there been an accident?
There was an accident 2.5 years ago, and 6 broken ribs. There was an accident a couple years before that and 2 broken ribs. there has been a
lot
of pain.
How is that tied to you?
I'm a vulnerable place.
Why are you vulnerable?
I am vulnerable because there's a huge emotion. There's a huge emotional burden. The words are coming slowly. A huge emotional burden. And it deeply affects me.
And is it emotions around the accident, or is it from something else?
It's life emotions. It's not specific to an accident or any particular event.
And so it's exacerbated maybe by the broken ribs or, that makes your pain. So it's not so much situational. It's more emotional, is what you're saying.
Yes, that's correct. And okay. The even the events that result in broken things or broken things that seem to appear out of nowhere are representative. They are symptoms. They are not causes.
I mean, there's so many different things that can affect you. What kind of mattress he sleeps on, his posture when he's typing, his ski technique, it's just, there's so much, but what I'm hearing you say that it just really comes down to emotional, and it's probably not 100%, but, and then over time, like if there's an emotional component for 10, 20, 50 years, like it can become physical, like the body takes on the form we've explored false self too. So it can go way back to emotional repression from childhood, but it after 30 years, or 50 years even, there's a physical manifestation that then it becomes situational, So,
right.
So, but for you, you're saying that almost the entirety of what your now end result is Sheldon, he's 60, I believe, and but it all mostly comes back to emotions at the core. So what emotions in particular? And are they stored with you? Are they stuck in you? Tell me whatever you can see.
Yeah. I'm feeling this and looking for words that go with it.
Let the
rage
words just
come to
you.
Rage is the first emotion that comes to mind, or that has seems important. Rage and guilt, and more guilt, and resentment. Those are the biggies.
Allow me, please, to speak. Which of those three, rage, guilt, or resentment, seems to be the most poignant?
Guilt is the
Allow
biggest
me, please,
one.
To speak to the voice of guilt stuck in the middle back. Who am I speaking to?
The voice of guilt stuck in Sheldon's middle back.
Tell me about you. Is this your home? Is this where you live?
Yes, it is. This is a central place.
Are there other parts of his body where you also live? Or mostly just here?
I live throughout his body. Mostly here in the middle part of the back.
Okay. So everyone else that's on the call, just notice where guilt lives in you. For me, it's in my chest, my solar plexus, and then just kind of just below my throat, kind of like a line that goes for about 8 or 9 inches, right in the middle. So just identify where you show up now. And what I'm going to propose is that Sheldon has a guilt practice. You know, whatever we won't look at is the key to freedom. Like, can he just spend some quality time with you every single day? Get to know you, give you some love. You're trying to get his attention through this pain in his back. You know, ultimately, that's what it comes down to, injuries that linger, illness that seems like there's got to be something funky going on that's a little bit more situational or genetic. Like, can we spend some time with just that, quote, you know, awful feeling that we just habitually try to get rid of? And when we spend some quality time with it, kind of like Kristen did with her knee back in the day, having a conversation with it. It doesn't necessarily have to be a conversation like what we're having using voice dialogue. It could just be like spending some time feeling the pain in his lower back, feeling the guilt without trying to get rid of it, using the four-step art of fear method. You know, I created that method to help people get in touch with their fear. And beneath the guilt will be fear, too. You know, can you see that right now? That a lot of what you're made up of is fear as well.
Yes.
If he were to do this, as the voice of guilt showing up in his middle back, what would that be like for you?
Well, I would be experiencing the main thing that I've been wanting to experience, which is awareness of me and a voice. So that would be ideal. That's all I want.
You know, there's the conversation that I just had with Pamela, and the voice of high blood sugar said, "Oh, Pamela, there's no need to feel guilt or shame." When I say to you, "Oh, there's no need for you to be here," how does that make you feel?
Well, that doesn't feel great. It feels like life has been feeling for a long time, like I just shouldn't be here.
Yeah, and Pamela,
like,
are you listening?
Somebody thinks I just shouldn't be here.
Right. Pamela, are you listening? It's like when we have you show up, guilt or shame, you know, we need to spend some quality time with you. We need to acknowledge you. We need to not try to get rid of you. It's like back to that husband saying, "Calm down," you know, to the wife. Like, that never works, right? It's like pouring gasoline on a fire when a husband says that to a wife. You know, when you say to you, guilt, like, "Well, you just don't need to be here," like, that doesn't make you go away. But if we spend some quality time with you, will you, what will happen? What will happen for you? I mean, you're still going to be in his life.
Oh, sure. Yeah, at a minimum, what will happen is the absence of me trying to do something dramatic to get some attention. And it's not that I want some attention. It's that there are things that deserve attention, and I'm a part of that process. And won't have to have lots of pain to be getting attention anymore.
Right. Same goes with rage, and I forget the other emotion.
Yeah, it all ties together. It's okay.
Yeah, like have a rage practice. Or just, you don't even need to give you a name. Like, we can just say the pain in lower back. Do the four-step art of fear method with the pain in the lower back and just see what comes up. I mean, for sure, it's going to be fascinating. Am I in resistance to it? Step three, oh my gosh, you know, what is it am I feeling today? It's always changing. And then spend some time, you know, noticing the resistance, kind of dealing with the resistance. And once that's sorted out, just spend some time with you or rage or whoever shows up today. And it's a way for Sheldon to love himself. It's a way for Sheldon to get into his body and out of his mind. It's a way, you know, our bodies are just always so cleverly communicating with us, whether it be disease or injury or pain or you name it, just like pay attention to me. And yet we still are just becoming smarter and, you know, talking faster. And, you know, like if you live in Silicon Valley and you're not speaking in rapid sentences, you're not considered smart anymore. I mean, we're just like, we are literally becoming more like computers than human beings, but just to go back to our roots, get into our bodies, and just feel. Oh my gosh. The impact that that can have not only on us, but the whole of humanity is profound. All right, allow me please to speak to the voice of the self again. And I don't know where everybody else on the call went with this. Maybe you went to your lower back, maybe, or mid-back. Maybe you went to cholesterol. Maybe you went, for me, I almost feel like I went to my neck or I went to my RA. And so hopefully you played along in your own unique way. Does anybody have any questions before we say goodbye? So these calls are a way to compartmentalize our problems, our life, you know, just have a moment of awareness for 1 hour, 1 hour and 10 minutes as it turns out. Hope that's okay. And get some insights, you know, see things from a bigger lens, like a bird's eye view, not just see it from the bird's eye view of our looking down at our own lives, but looking this week at all of humanity, or American humanity at least, and getting that perspective, that bigger picture. And so I put my hands together, I bow to you, because this is now your koan, your riddle, like how can this serve me? Will this be the catalyst that has me do the four-step art of fear method for the next week? You know, that's your homework. Like, can I just locate whatever the biggest ache or pain or disease that I'm dealing with right now and just spend some quality time feeling the emotional component of it, spending some time with the disease for that matter? That's our practice. So bow to you. Thank you for engaging in consciousness practice with me. Good job. And please be sure to submit questions for next week. I only got one question this week, so don't let the last two calls come and go, and you never got a chance to be in the hot seat. So that's it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kristen.
Thank you. Thank you, Pamela. Thank you, Sheldon. This is profound. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye-bye.